irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today we have with us in studio Arthur Samuel Joseph, M.A. Arthur is the founder and chairman of the Vocal Awareness Institute and is acknowledged as one of the world's leading communication strategists and authorities on the power of the human voice. He is well known as a teacher and mentor who has made it his life goal to change the world through voice. With over 5 decades of teaching experience worldwide, Mr. Joseph is recognized for training world-famous actors, singers, national and international political leaders, broadcasting and entertainment professionals, as well as motivational speakers, among many other individuals. Mr. Joseph has trained professional athletes in broadcasting and for important speeches at events such as the Pro Football Hall of Fame induction ceremony. He trains Fortune 500 CEOs and thought leaders like Tony Robbins, as well as those for whom English is a second language, including actors like Arnold Schwarzenegger. As a former faculty member of the University of California, Mr. Joseph has made guest appearances at Yale, George Washington, New York University, and many other highly recognized institutions to teach and speak about his life's work. And I have been fortunate enough to consider him a friend and a mentor throughout the years. Thank you so much for joining us today, Arthur.
Thank you so much, Jennifer, for having me. This is a lovely space.
I am so happy, and it's down the street from you, so yes. How can it get any better than this?
And you in this magnificent magenta dress. For those of you who don't ever get to see Jennifer but only hear her, she loves to wear great dresses.
Yes, I do. If I had it all my way, I'd wear a princess crown and a dress every day. So, Arthur, you have this amazing list of accolades and people that you've taught and mentored and worked with. How did this become your life's passion?
Many of us, we all have our story and our foundation story. And nobody got to any particular place on their journey unscathed. So this life is not for the faint of heart. And I was born into very, very austere circumstances and never had a father. It was my mother who was my hero. Mm. And at 4 years of age, she dragged me into an accordion studio with her hand on my wrist. And I was more than a little reluctant, apparently, and sat me in a chair. And I felt morphed, and fortunately not into a cockroach like Gregor Samsa in Metamorphosis, but into music. So I knew at 4 that music was my life. And in the 6th grade, I auditioned for choir, couldn't sing America the Beautiful on pitch. They wouldn't let me in the choir.
Oh, no.
7th grade, I auditioned for Mrs. Grill and her high tones in junior high, and she let me in her choir, so I knew at 12 that singing was its direction. At 15, I meet one of God's great gifts to me, my first teacher, Mrs. Julia Kinsel, to whom my first book many years ago was dedicated. She was in her 70s, I was 15. In the middle of my lessons, I behaved in this bizarre way. I would clamp my hands manically to my ears, and I would say, "Stop, no, I don't want to do it like that, I hear it this way." And she allowed this unique behavior because she knew something about me I didn't yet know. I hear vocal sound differently than anyone I've ever met on the planet. When I hear a voice, I hear you. And then I teach from within that. You've had the experience, and it's a very intimate relationship. However, the root of the word intimate means intrinsic or essential. So through this work, we learn how essential it is to be us, and frankly, how much work it takes for us to be ourselves while others watch. So, cutting off this long narrative, I took a master's in voice. I'm a classical singer by training. And it all just kept morphing. And so today, whether I teach broadcasters, athletes, executives, sitting here visiting with you, Vocal awareness is now a trademarked work in several areas, and I'm teaching empowerment through voice, which is one of those trademarked areas. This is empowerment. When you give me your voice, you give me you. And so many of your clients, they are in, sometimes we don't know how we're going to get that next job. And so I teach that when you go on an audition, when you go on a job interview, don't present, be who you are. Do not seek approval. What does it take to embody how you want to be known? So we want, when we leave the meeting, to be the only one they speak about. So what compels someone to hear you? If I speak to you right now and I say, what a joy it is to be with you, Jennifer. Thank you so much for having me on your show, versus what a joy it is to be with you, Jennifer. Thank you so much for having me on your show. Now, the first one was disingenuous, simply because it was too high and too fast. The second one, all I did was breathe, allow my voice to be in a different pitch range, and slow down. I go on for days. I don't come up for air. And for your listeners, Jennifer is always like this. She just listens. She absorbs so effectively. And because of your integrity, you then translate that into what is integral to you. So with your audience, you're as genuine as anybody I've ever worked with, anyone I've ever known. There is no artifice. And you genuinely care about helping people be their best and have the success that they seek. It's one reason I wanted to be on your show, because I want to honor that.
I'm speechless. And we both know that doesn't happen often. Thank you, Arthur. To the listeners out there, there aren't words that I can put in my mouth or deliver into your ears that can express the deepest gratitude that I have for one of my greatest teachers sitting here in front of me and sharing his wisdom with you. I'm sure you're feeling it in the same way I felt it when you hear the resonance in Arthur's voice. He speaks right into your heart. He cuts right through the BS and gets to the essence of who he is and who you are, which I don't think I've ever met another human being quite like Arthur. And it's such a great gift that he has to share, even the example he just gave. To me, when you gave the second example of speaking, you actually feel it as a human being rather than writing it off as just words that you're sharing with someone, which I think is how most of us live our lives, whether it's in an audition, in an interview, even in some of our most intimate relationships. We speak words without intending them to be heard.
It's a very interesting narrative. I teach that speech is habit. We don't think about a breath. We don't think about the strategic value of really claiming our power through the power of our own voice. I didn't just say through claiming our power through the power of our own voice. I said claiming our power through the power of our own voice. The first time I'm just saying the words and I'm not paying any attention to them. The second time I actually hear them, and as you know from our work, I see every single word on the virtual computer screen in my mind's eye. And as your listeners tune into that, I'll do it again. And notice what words are underlined. I tune into every single word, and I see them on the virtual computer screen in my mind's eye. At the end of every thought, I see a period. Not just sense it, but see it. This is a critical part of vocal awareness called visceral language, another trademarked element. We make voice visual in this work. Over the last several months, since I've last seen you, I created the Vocal Awareness, a new form of mastery, the Vocal Awareness Leadership Academy.
That's amazing.
Yeah, fully online, curriculum, deliverables, timeline. so you can, in the privacy of your space, be self-contained and have me as your tour guide on the journey, and filled with video, written, audio tests, all kinds of things to help you claim your power. Visceral language is a fundamental element of that. As I speak with you right now, we visually engage one another across the console. And being the elegant, respectful woman you are, you look. What we tend to do, however, when we do the speaking, that's part of our social conditioning, to look at one another while the other is speaking. But most of us, when we go to speak, look away to gather a thought, whatever. So do a little role play with me for a moment. And what do you think of what I'm saying right now? How is our time going today?
Our time, as always, is extraordinary. It is.
See where your eyes just went?
You're right. And I didn't think I did that, Arthur. I was so proud of myself as you were saying that, thinking, he's right. There are a lot of people who do that, but I am not one of those people. And I must admit, I am.
You just did it three more times, but who's counting?
And, Arthur, no.
And part of the point is, I traditionally, realistically, don't care where we look to gather a thought. But as a discipline, I teach my students how to maintain eye contact as an exercise, because I don't want to give my power away. This is a behavior. But I'm teaching we are not our behaviors. That's what we do, but is that who we are? So I want to create a pattern interrupt. That's what Tony used to call my seven rituals, pattern interrupts, because we're changing a behavior. We're interrupting a pattern. And so I want to break that pattern, because I want us to be in charge not just of our message, but always equally of the messenger. It is not just what we say, but I hope your listeners are learning today how we say it is equally important. Eye contact is part of that. It will literally change the sound of your voice. Look over there for a second and just talk to me and say 10 seconds of something.
This is very awkward, and there are a lot of things I'm learning that I didn't know.
Great. Same words to me, and set it up with a conscious, loving breath, please.
This is very awkward, and I don't quite know what you want me to say.
Did you hear that the pitch was a little different?
Yeah.
A little lower. Your pace was slower. And that's what happens when we make eye contact with another person. It literally changes the sound of our voice. So on an interview, maintaining eye contact is critically important.
What if you don't have somebody extraordinary like you to work with? How can someone practice eye contact?
To the mirror. I spend a lot of time teaching us how to work on a mirror. In this leadership course, a good portion of it is done on the mirror. It's, if you wanted to be a great classical dancer, can one learn to dance well without a mirror? No. Mirror helps objectify the experience. Also, video camera. Practice looking at your iPhone or your iPad and write out an opening statement and practice delivering it. I have a dear friend client whom I've taught for close to 4 years. He's an EVP at a global company. And when we first started working, he was in his mid-50s, clearly already a very successful businessman. And he'd never written out a PowerPoint presentation in his life. He had a few bullets. I know that your listeners, none of them ever do that, of course.
Of course not.
And his first town hall, in preparation for it, we wrote out the entire speech, and he read it off his mini iPad verbatim. And it was annotated in visceral language. And I was sitting next to one of his direct reports who I hadn't yet taught. She became my student shortly thereafter. And on her computer, everything that we had underlined, she was typing. It's a piece of this work called subliminal persuasion. The way I inflect something influences your unconscious mind. Remember that. Let's pay attention to it. So she wrote it, typed it in her computer. So that went on like that for about a year and a half. Tremendous rehearsal time, and then reading. About a year and a half into this, he had a board meeting with a major corporation that is one of the owners of this company. And a dozen or so people in the board meeting, including John, and not a note in front of him. From that point on, every town hall didn't even use a confidence monitor, just had his slides, but we'd worked it for hours on the weekend in preparation. As you know, I train a great number of elite athletes, and I have a theme in vocal awareness that a champion does it differently. Now, in my work, that's not simply a sports-centric theme. That's a life theme. The people who come to see you, the people listening in, these are champions to me because they want to be and do better. They don't just take it as it comes. Every year I do a keynote address and teach at the NFL Broadcast Boot Camp. And this year my theme was a champion does it differently. Because also this recent Hall of Fame, I had three more students inducted, and two of whom speeches I wrote, one of which went viral. And we spent, for two of them, spent 5 months crafting and practicing how to deliver them. Their vision, their ideas, our words, and their voice, but performance, every little detail was orchestrated. So that when they showed up in Canton on August 4th, all you saw was them being themselves, being in what I call the work, the capital W work. But I asked these men at boot camp a rhetorical question. Is there a difference between a very good player and a true champion? Of course. I asked again rhetorically, is it more talent or a greater gift? Not necessarily. It's the quality of the work ethic. The champion works harder, smarter, and sustains it over time than anyone else on the team. I then ask a question I'd never asked before. Does the champion make the team play better? To a man, they all said yes. So I raise this, again, rhetorical question. Who listening into this call doesn't want to aspire? John, when he gave me a birthday gift for my 70th birthday a year and a half ago, it was called The Audacity of Hoop. He likes basketball. And it had a picture cover art of President Obama in the Oval Office in his suit holding a basketball behind his back. And the story is his presidency in his life through the narrative of 3-on-3 pickup basketball. He loves to play 3-on-3 basketball. And John said, thank you for introducing me to the audacity of voice. And I said in my response, to be audacious, we first have to believe in our own possibility. So today is not about motivating your listeners. It's about inspiring them, inspirare, to breathe into them, to tap into, to awaken, to claim whom I'm capable of being so that the same inner champion is awakened and shows up everywhere. Does this make relevant, pragmatic sense?
Arthur, there are not words in the English language that can do justice as a response to what you're sharing. And I noticed I looked away. At least I caught myself in that moment, because for those of you who aren't in studio with us, I'm sure you can hear it in Arthur's voice and his beingness. The energy in the room is palpable. He is extremely intentional, like he said earlier, in every thought, every word, every message. It's very powerful is the only word I can come up with.
Say that again and put a period after the word powerful and underline the last word, please. It is what?
It is very powerful.
Now, just by doing that, seeing the period and underlining the word, your inflection went down. We heard a little bit more authority, subtle authenticity shift, just by seeing that word and the period.
Arthur, I think of you before every show. It says, allow a breath and put a period after every statement. I have an alarm right before every show, and I'll be damned if I can do it every time.
I teach that voice is power. When we own our voice, we own our power. It doesn't mean that we need to be big and bombastic to be powerful. That's not what I'm talking about. As you just observed, one can be very powerful expressing themselves more like this. Perhaps it's time for us to share with our listeners some tips as to how they could do this. What do you think?
I think that would be genius, Arthur.
So, we begin with embodying ourselves as men and women of stature. Stature isn't just simply sitting or standing up straight. Stature is embodying the aspirational self, the dignity of whom you truly know yourself to be, in what I refer to as the deeper self. So as we sit in stature, we pull a thread gracefully, elegantly from the top of our head, slowly beginning at our core, just below the navel, and pull and pull. And then as we move up through the top of our head, it's not static. We put our arm down and we stay in that state. And you'll notice your core is engaged. Release your tongue and jaw, your neck and shoulders. You'll also notice as you put yourself into stature, the first thing the body does is inhale. Try it again. Put yourselves in stature. And you feel that inhale. Then that's preparation for everything we do. And it doesn't mean we have to be sitting up erect. We can be relaxed with our leg crossed. Stature comes from 3 inches below the navel and extends. Our first of the 7 rituals is to say thank you to Source. I'm working with an individual who is running for the U.S. Senate who is more of a humanist and didn't want me to use the word God in our lesson. They don't have that kind of relationship with that belief system, in their belief system. So I simply said, say thank you. And we get the same response as you're about to get. Please take in the thought within yourself of saying thank you. And the first thing the body does is inhale. The second ritual doesn't have to make empirical sense. We don't have to understand anything about what I'm saying. Just hear the words love and let go. Feel what it might be like to simply love and let go. Don't think about whom or what. Merely hear the words. Now please take in the thought of loving and letting go. In all three of those explorers, stature, source, loving and letting go, the first thing the body did was inhale. It's the body's way of saying, thank you for giving me permission to be myself. I breathe to acknowledge that. The root of the word spirit, spiritus, means to breathe. What vocal awareness is communication mastery. My last book that I'm so privileged that Commissioner Roger Goodell, Commissioner of the National Football League, wrote the foreword for, is entitled 7 Minutes a Day to Communication Mastery. Vocal leadership, 7 minutes a day to communication mastery. These rituals that I'm introducing can actually be done in 7 minutes a day. The rule is we don't leave home without brushing our teeth. We don't leave home without doing vocal awareness. Any artist I've ever taught, any athlete I've ever taught, always has rituals before they come on stage or before they compete. And the ritual always has a spiritual component. Always. Because mastery requires the integration of mind, body, spirit. We just don't think about it outside of a competitive environment or performance moment. However, every public encounter, from that cold call to that interview to that audition to that first date, is a performance, not a presentation. It's a performance because someone is watching or listening. Now, why would this man want me to be performing? I just want to be authentic. Presentation, to present, literally means the root source, to introduce formally, to bring before the public. Performance means to carry out, fulfill, to do. We've misappropriated the meanings of these words. So out of respect for what it takes to be ourselves while others watch, we have to practice being ourselves. And these rituals is where we begin. The third ritual, is to allow a slow, silent, conscious, loving breath. How weird is that?
I love it, and I tell perfect strangers about it and reference you.
And imagine if you go to my website and see some of the people I've taught over the years and some of the corporations I've worked in, I don't leave pieces out. So it's part of the integrity of the work. Integrity, integration have the same root source. They mean wholeness. It doesn't matter what somebody else thinks. And since we're never going to be able to read their mind, why get stuck worrying about what they're thinking? Let us just be in the integrity of who we are. So this third ritual, if I ask you to take a deep breath, we take a nice deep breath and we notice our chest rises. Tongue and jaw also tighten, other things happen. Now if I say exhale and allow a slow, silent breath, allow it, don't take it. Watch the beginning of the inhale. Slow, allow it. Deeper, deeper. And you notice your lateral oblique muscles expand more. You begin to work like a bellows. Just by changing the word allow, love, from take. And it also introduces the reality that a breath is not only physical, it's also emotional. When we're stressed, when we need to make an important presentation, we feel like we're shot out of a cannon. Everybody's watching. So we created in vocal awareness what I call a mastery moment. The axiom is the meeting begins before you walk in the room. There's an old 50s joke delivered by a Jewish borscht belt comedian of the day named Henny Youngman. And the joke was, he stopped a passerby in New York and asked, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? And they answered, practice, practice, practice. And so you go to Carnegie Hall today and you can actually buy a t-shirt. On the front it says Carnegie Hall. On the back it says practice, practice, practice. Any great champion will tell you the secret to their success is practice, practice, practice. Preparation, preparation, preparation. So that mastery moment, before I walk into the meeting, I'll stand in a corner and put myself in stature. I'll thank Source. I'll focus on my brand, my persona. How do I want to be known? I'll do this, which is going to be the fourth ritual, finding the hub of the voice, seeing the edge and arc of sound. But there are much more elaborate ways to do this. I'll show them the rather exaggerated one. Two fingers under my tongue, stretching my jaw, sounding really like I'm going to peel paint. But the less obvious one is finding the hub of the voice, allowing that 5-second silent inhalation, fingernail on the edge of my top lip as a focal technique, and I merely do this, somewhat nasally, and soaring through the arc of sound, my hand moving in this 90-degree angle. And where that pitch ends up, I begin speaking in that moment. And it can be done even this subtly. Nobody needs to know. Nobody needs to hear. But we're separating from the white noise of a moment ago and beginning to establish ourselves in this moment. The fifth ritual is take my time. Nothing is gained in communication by going too fast, but potentially everything could be lost. Understanding, confidence, authenticity, ... I have an exercise people can read about in my book, timing a read. I just did this with a broadcaster today. If I speak to you like this and I say, this is really such a wonderful time I'm having with you, Jennifer, and you timed it, it might be 3.5 seconds. And I do it like this. Having such a wonderful time with you today, Jennifer, thank you. They're going to ostensibly be the same time. How do we convey information in a way that is not rushed? That's what Ritual 5 is about. Claiming my power, not being afraid of what you think of me while I'm being me, because we tend to rush all the time. I teach that breath, our third ritual, breath, a song without a rest is not the same piece of music, but how many of your listeners, how many of us every day say, I mean, you know, I think, to fill space? In vocal awareness, I don't do that. Space has value. It gives me thinking time. As I begin to slow down in that fifth ritual, I create more thinking time in that space. So now I have more control of the message and the messenger. The sixth ritual, pay attention, deeper listening. In vocal awareness, I spell voice with a capital V, which refers to the deeper self, my inner voice, this interior conversation that only I hear, and source, perhaps. And the lowercase V, my outer voice, this activity here. So I teach us how to pay attention on the outside while consistently listening deeply on the inside. Because the whole point of the work is the seventh ritual. Be myself. However, it's not written, be myself, two words, myself. It's written as three words with a capital S for the third. Be myself. And it does not say present. It says be. So perhaps the last technique I will offer your listeners today is a really fundamental one, and perhaps the first thing they want to explore when looking into this work. Your persona statement. The root of the word persona literally means through the sound. One's identity is largely conveyed through the sound of a voice. I can tell your listeners that the woman you listen to on the radio is the same impeccable woman you would meet if you met her in public. The same person shows up everywhere. Her genuineness, her care, her passion, her intellect. So choosing our vocal and presentational persona is critical. You answer two questions. How do I believe I'm presently perceived? Second question, how would I like to be known? Don't write out cryptic bullet points, put them in sentence form. I want to hear the aspirational version. This is the person I want to be, because this work is categorically committed to not making you into someone you're not, but helping you bring out who you're capable of being. And then you write it. And then you practice delivering it. You write a vision statement. This is what I want to accomplish in my life. And you put it on recording, video, audio. Practice it until you believe it. Notice if you flinch. Ask yourself why. Why does that make me so uncomfortable to be so present? Sociologists tell us the greatest fear in our society is public speaking. It's a misnomer. The greatest fear are actually two fears, and this work helps you confront it and deal with it. Fear of abandonment and ownership of my power. Not being afraid of what you think of me while I claim myself. That's the contract that I want us to have with ourselves. We're in serious time in our lives. The planet is having real challenges these days. The debacle of Washington, the obscenity of what is going on there. Doesn't matter which side of the aisle your listeners are on. We advocated. I want us to hold our representatives responsible. I want us to hold ourselves responsible. We have to expect the best and the brightest to be responsible to us. But if we abdicate, we get what we deserve. So I wanted to awaken us. There was a movie back in the 80s called Network, and it was an Academy Award-winning film, and there was a scene in it, and a man was in a New York apartment building and saying, shouting out from his window, I'm mad as hell and I don't want to take it anymore. I'm trying to awaken us in this context, to really pay attention to ourselves, to others, at work. Don't allow oneself to be disrespected. Don't reveal your jugular because I can clomp on and say, okay, you're easy prey. Practice this. Practice claiming your sovereignty, supreme excellence, or an example of it. I had a dear, dear woman come study with me many years ago who had read one of my books and wrote me a letter feeling that I could help her. She came out to Los Angeles. She lived in New York. And she showed me her forearm with numbers on it because she was a Holocaust survivor. And one of her goals, one of her careers post-Holocaust, was traveling the globe singing songs of the Holocaust. But she always felt that there was something she wasn't tapping into, that was something still blocked. So even before our first lesson, I sent her home. I said, I really want you thinking about this, because when we close down to keep out the pain, we keep out the joy. And when we open this, we will open it safely, but you have to be willing to confront what is on the other side of that door once we open it. She went back to New York and wrote me a letter and said, I'm ready. Came back out. Her entire voice changed, her speaking voice, her singing voice, because we began to help her deal through the structure of this work, through the breath, through the God consciousness, through the time, through the respect of how not to be afraid, of no longer how to feel that she's a victim or ashamed or anything, whatever it may have been. Opening up to what was possible was now her mantra, and that became part of her, the next stage of her journey. In the same context, when I had the privilege of meeting the Nobel laureate Elie Wiesel, who was a Holocaust survivor, won the Nobel Peace Prize. Shaking his hand, speaking with him for a moment, I began to sob. Not because I was meeting this amazing human being, but because the sound of his voice went in my heart and just knocked me out. Same thing in the presence of the Dalai Lama. The same thing when listening to the Beethoven Appassionata played by the late Glenn Gould. The perfection of it all. So perhaps I end this narrative by returning to where we started. The point of this work is empowerment through voice. What does it take to be ourselves? Prior to that next interview, prior to that next business meeting, do this work. Set your goals. Here's where I am today. Where do I want to be a month from now, a year from now? And then work to make it come true. Many years ago, I was going to sleep one night, about 10 o'clock, reading a magazine before going to sleep. It was Quest magazine. It was, I believe, 1982. And the thought came to me that wouldn't go away until it made me get up and write it down, and the only paper I had was the magazine. So I took out my pen and started scribbling. The thought was that voice is the only artistic experience which is both finite and infinite at the same time. It is fallible and fragile, gone in an instant, unseen, only felt. Remembered from the past even a long moment ago, anticipating its future even as its present is just occurring. It's temporal, visceral, organic. Such a complex, simple, and beguiling transcendent state. That's what came out. Spent the next several years processing this, looking at it from the perspective of voice science, philosophically, spiritually, intellectually, psychologically. And I substituted words. Life is the only artistic experience which is both finite and infinite at the same time. Or love, it is fallible and fragile, gone in an instant, unseen, only felt. And I came to understand the paradigm of my own work, which is to help us all integrate life and love through the integrity, the communication of who we are. We are here to make a difference. There is only one of us in all time. And if we block it, the world will never have it. So being on this show with you today, and to see if your listeners could see you welling up just a bit on the radio, it's simply because this is who you are. And I know I've spoken a really long time without coming up for air, but I hope you find value in what I've been sharing.
Thank you. There's not really anywhere else to go from here except to say thank you, Arthur, for sharing what you shared. If I had 100 hours on the show, it wouldn't be enough time to have you authentically share what could make the biggest difference in all of our lives, and that's to know ourselves and to find our true voice.
You just summed it up eloquently. Thank you, my beautiful friend.
Thank you, Arthur. And I don't know about anybody else out there, but I am going to immediately go download everything new that you have online that I haven't already found. So, again, it has been an honor, a privilege, and just one of the most humbling experiences of my life to get to listen to you share your wisdom over the last 45 minutes.
And if the listeners ever want to go track me down, they can find out how through you on my website.
VocalAwareness.com, and I've read his books. I've been fortunate enough to have been his student and to be a student again. And to anybody out there who's ever wanted to find your voice, find Arthur and find Vocal Awareness.
God bless you, my friend.
God bless you, Arthur. And thank you for tuning in today to everybody out there. wishing you a wonderful rest of your week, and may this carry you through this week, the next, and the end of the year.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.